Welcome to the 141st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving Eve as I record this. The eating season is upon us. I hope you also have some activities planned for the Thanksgiving weekend. Turkey trots are very popular these days. Get out and run a 5K. We usually just do our own turkey trot with the dogs around here, do a 5 or 6 mile run around the area. But, you know, a lot of people get out and pass the football and get out and take walks. We're in the membership practice this month. We're doing the step challenge, so I hope people continue to do their steps over Thanksgiving, especially Thanksgiving Day, to kind of walk off some of the excess of calories you may be eating. It can be a very stressful time. You know, the thought of having no big turkey on the table, this is the first year if you're plant-based, if you're having people over, and how you're going to deal with it. And it can often be seen in a negative light, but, you know, I think it's a great time to look at the positivity associated with, you know, taking back your health. A lot of my patients, I'm very thankful for all of my patients and members in my practice. And, you know, and I'm so happy for the ones that have had a recent great improvement of their health, lowering their hemoglobin A1Cs, getting off their diabetic medications, getting off their blood pressure medications. And so this is a time that can be very dangerous because people can actually slip up and kind of fall prey to the temptations and maybe pressures from your family. But it's also a time to share and kind of demonstrate and be the beacon of light that your new health choices and, you know, just showing everybody how good you look after you've taken back your health and enjoy eating a whole food plant-based diet and enjoy the health and be thankful for the health that you've attained by changing your lifestyle. You know, I think I said on the last episode, because we weren't sure whether we're going to have an episode here before Thanksgiving, but, you know, some of the things we do, we have cranberries with celery and pecans and mandarin oranges. That's one of the dishes. We also have mushroom gravy and sweet potatoes and mashed potatoes and lima beans. And we do stuffing balls that, you know, are Ezekiel bread with celery and onion made with some vegetable broth and baked. And that's good to put that mushroom gravy on. And people think that they're missing out when they don't have a turkey to put the stuffing in, but that's not so. What you are missing out is that terrible full filling afterwards. So you'll have plenty of energy to get out and walk and enjoy speaking with your family and, you know, doing things around the holiday. A lot of people go shopping right afterwards. So you can just imagine the thought of eating a traditional turkey dinner and having all those arteries constrict and then trying to go out and shop and feeling bad. So no wonder people are in a bad mood. But, you know, eating a whole food plant-based diet, you'll be in a better mood to go out and shop and enjoy your family. If you're traveling and you don't have control over the menu, then, you know, I don't think you should fret over it. There are plenty of sides to choose from. They may not be perfect size, you know, size. The mashed potatoes may have been exposed to some dairy, or the sweet potatoes may have a little bit more sugar in them than you would normally like to have. Cranberry salad should be pretty good. There should be other salads there. If you can avoid the turkey and avoid the really oily dressing, if that's there, and eat some sides, and then know that when you get home or when you get back to your house, you can prepare those sides like you'd like to have and have a nice meal, that would be a really good way of getting around it. I've suggested other people, you know, kind of eat before they go. Have foods that are good for them. Have their greens, especially nitric oxide-producing greens, before. So if you had some regular potatoes and nitric oxide-producing greens, such as kale, Swiss chard, beets, collards, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, you know the drill. And then you went out, at least you'd have some nitric oxide-producing vegetables in you before you went out, and I think you'd do much better. In class, we talked about, you know, the psychology around all of this. You know, we think of Thanksgiving as the turkey. Where it used to be a time of getting together and giving thanks, Our local grocery store has a really nice commercial, or the Publix grocery store. It's not really local anymore, but and it's all around being around family. And then they show the food, but they put it last. And I think that's a really good gesture that, you know, it's family first and gathering first, and what's on the table is second. And, you know, the sides get a bad name. You know, the sides aren't secondary. To me, the sides are some of the best food on the tables. So if we think about it as a plant-based gathering, we have all these things to choose from, and no one thing has to trump the other things. So enjoy all these sides that you can think of. I forgot to mention Swiss chard, I think, but make sure you have some greens on the table. You know, a big plate of beets is a great thing to have on the table. We also do a quinoa with sweet potatoes and cranberries, and you can put that in a pumpkin. And we have, I guess I forgot to say, the pumpkin pie that we make out of white beans and pumpkin. So, again, you can enjoy all these sides without one thing having to dominate, and eat to your full of the good things, as opposed to just being miserable with some of these high oil foods that are on the traditional table. Even though I joke about it, Forbes magazine confirmed that the death spikes through, you know, starting at Thanksgiving and through the end of the years, 33% because of heart attacks, strokes. And again, it's, some the stress of the holidays, but more it's the nutrition of the holidays. It's like trying to go run a marathon without ever having trained. A lot of people, you know, eat these things in such excess that their bodies just are shocked in the system, and then we expect our bodies to perform daily routines of going to work and everything, all the other stressors involved, plus filling our body full of these harmful toxins. So again, kind of eat to prepare. So eat so you can be with family, do your shopping, put your decorations up, move around, and enjoy the holidays, as opposed to increase your risk of being in the hospital. I certainly have experienced many times the day after Thanksgiving in my practice a lot of hospitalizations for heart failure. And yesterday we did a shopping tour with my nutrition class, and we actually went through the Thanksgiving, that kind of the traditional sides and the traditional dishes of Thanksgiving, and looked at the sodium content. And if you look at the can of mushroom gravy, the mushroom gravy itself with, you know, 400 or 500 milligrams of salt, the mushroom soup that people often put on the green bean casserole that's can be 2 grams of salt by the time you use the whole gram, 2 or 3 grams of salt, the stovetop stuffing, you know, another a couple grams of salt. The turkey itself has been soaked in salt before you ever got a hold of it, and then it's seasoned and the fat associated with that. So I can just go on and on, you know, the salt in the potatoes that are made traditionally, the salt in the stuffing, it just goes on and on. So people can get, you know, 7, 8 grams of salt, and so they end up in heart failure the day after Thanksgiving. So end up spending days there. So, you know, what a great way to ruin a holiday and start to get you sick for the rest of the holidays by consuming, you know, this high salty food. There's a psychologist named Robert Kern that has a YouTube video. It's worth checking out, looking at change, dealing with the actual change versus the intention to change. And if you apply that to, the basics of his talk, a little short talk on the YouTube video was, you know, at 1 year, people were told to take, look at taking their blood pressure medicines. And even if they told they had a huge risk of a stroke, heart attack, at 50% of the people weren't taking their medications at 1 year. And we know this to be true, that when we write a prescription for blood pressure medicines, oftentimes people are given a free sample, and sometimes they don't fill the prescription afterwards. And if they do fill that prescription, then oftentimes they don't fill the second one, or they start to miss days. And then once they start to miss days, sometimes it gets stopped. And, you know, oftentimes the result is we see them in hospital with elevated blood pressure and symptoms because they've stopped the medications. But the reality of it is they know that the blood pressure medicine is to prevent or to help prevent a stroke, heart attack, or death, perhaps. Maybe they've had heart failure and they've been given a medication. But yet when asked why that they would do it, they stop. They don't have a really good answer early on. And we always, as physicians, feel that they just, you know, didn't take the time to fill the medication, or we didn't communicate with the patient enough, so they stopped the medication, or they just weren't being responsible and didn't fill their medication. But sometimes it's, you know, the reason can be as such as, you know, well, if I start taking the medication, I'll never be able to stop taking the medication. If I take this medication, then I'm clearly defining myself as someone who has disease. So if I don't take it, I don't have the disease. If I take this medication, then I've entered like another stage of my life. You know, I'm officially old because I have to take blood pressure medications. So these can be reasons, underlying reasons for people not to take their medication. So if you apply that to Thanksgiving and change as far as your nutrition behavior, you can look at it, well, you know, people are afraid not to put that turkey on the table because of what people will think. Will it mean that they'll never have a turkey? This is going to be a loss forever. This is going to change the dynamics of their family. Will people never come over? If they don't eat the sides, where they go, will people not invite them? Will they be ostracized by their family? So there's a lot of psychological things that can go on to go along with it. If you're one of these people thinking those things, I'm going to tell you right up front, it's not a big deal. No matter how bad you think that Thanksgiving might be without a turkey, or how bad you think people might make fun of you, or how bad it will be to have to avoid these sides, I got to tell you, you're going to get through the day and you're going to feel better because of it. And that if you're one of these people that are not serving a turkey for the first time, you're going to get through it, and it's going to become your new tradition. And people are going to like the other sides. You fill in the hole. So it's something that we put a lot of worry into, and assume that this is a big thing, when the reality of it is the day passes and you're going to get through it just fine, and you're no worse for not eating all the greasy foods. So, you know, I think what we make in our mind, things are going to be much worse, and we create a story for how things are going to go if we were to make changes. So I would suggest that maybe you think about the story of eating better, and how much better it will go, and how many more Thanksgivings you may have by changing what's on the menu. Just remember that adopting a whole food, plant-based diet, avoiding cooking with oil, the side effects of this are going to be that the weight comes off, your joint pains improve, you have more mobility, you have a better outlook on life because of the increased serotonin and dopamine that you're able to produce. Your energy is going to improve. You're going to have a more ability to shop, put those Christmas decorations up. And your chest pain or your peripheral vascular pain associated with blocked leg arteries is going to improve when you're walking around. Your neuropathy is going to improve. The swelling in your legs are going to improve. Your shortness of breath is going to improve. So it's an early Christmas present. And I'm going to end the Thanksgiving food discussion and activity discussion by challenging everybody to get 10,000 steps between now and December 31st every day. And it doesn't take that many. Just walking around doing your daily chores, you're probably going to get 5,000 to 6,000. That means you got to come up with another 4,000. And the other day when I was I did my swimming as my workout, and I had a slow day at the office or a day where I didn't have to go to the hospital, I was under 10,000 when it got to be evening. And so I just jumped on the treadmill for 15 minutes and got a quick 2,000 steps. So it doesn't take long to get those 10,000 steps in. And, you know, 10,000 steps is, yeah, it's close to 5 miles, give or take a little bit with the way the step counters go. But, you know, to know that you're able to cover that distance, that's a good sign of health. So if you can't get 10,000, do a 10% increase every day. Do a 10% increase a week to try to get to that 10,000. If you're close, if you're 7,000, you can do 10,000. So I'll say if you're 3,000, then start the 10% increase. But if you're 7,000, you can do 10,000. So make a goal, or I'll challenge you, 10,000 every day, to see whether or not you can do this for the to the end of the year. And then we'll make another challenge.
This kind of leads us into the new blood pressure guidelines defined by the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology. Before, definition of a high blood pressure was 140 over 90, and the 130 over 80 was pre-hypertension. So, you know, it's obvious that people have a blood pressure. There was a study done in New England Journal of Medicine several years ago that if a blood pressure is over 120 over 70, you start to see increase in events. So the American Heart Association has come up with a statement saying that now we're going to define blood pressure. High blood pressure is 130 over 80. This means that 103 million more adults in the United States, or 46% of the U.S. population, is now hypertensive by the definition. We know the blood pressure 130 over 139, you have two times the risk of a heart attack, stroke, kidney failure. And what they're saying is, you know, not to say, okay, all these 103 million people should be put on blood pressure medicine, but we should start with lifestyle modification. The problem with this, as we all know, is that typically you're told in your doctor's office, eat healthy, watch your salt, and exercise. And people come into the office all the time. People email me all the time, say I don't add any salt to my diet, yet my blood pressure's up. I even get people that have emailed me recently saying, you know, they're plant-based for 6 months or 2 years now, and they're still hypertensive. To have high blood pressure means usually, in the majority of cases, is they're abnormal in blood vessels, meaning that the blood vessels, that endothelial layer, that single cell lining, does not secrete or is able to produce nitric oxide for the blood vessel to dilate. So the blood vessels become stiff and they can't react to change in volume. Add a change in volume, meaning that if you have a high salt intake, your body then retains water. There's more pressure on the lumen or the inside of the blood vessel, just like a hose. If you were to put more water pressure in that hose or more water running through a hose, there's more pressure itself on the walls of the hose. So when you eat a high salt diet, you're putting more pressure on the vessel, which leads to damage. Salt is also a direct toxin to the blood vessel, but just the stress of stretching that, and it's a bit of a muscle, the blood vessel wall. There's actually a muscular layer. So by stretching that muscle, you're increasing the pressure, and that results in an increase in blood pressure. And the artery's inability to dilate because it's diseased and it can't produce nitric oxide results in a higher blood vessel, higher pressure on blood vessels and in organs like your kidneys, your eyes, your brain. So these small, tiny blood vessels, as your arteries, you know, get out to the furthest reaches of your arms, your extremities, your organs, your brain, again, there's more pressure, and these little blood vessels can't tolerate it, and bad things happen, and that's what ends up with a stroke or a kidney disease or a heart attack or peripheral vascular disease. So that's kind of where we see it at the end of the road first, at the end of the line of the blood vessels. And people don't realize just how much salt they're consuming when you start adding up products. And when we did the shopping tour, as you know, I talked about earlier, just in looking at the salt in a mushroom gravy that's put on something, or the can of mushroom soup that's used in preparing the green bean casserole, or the salt in the stovetop stuffing, even the salt in cereals, the salt in barbecue sauce, even mustard, ketchup, of course, soy sauce, you know, all the other teriyaki sauces, not to mention if people aren't on a plant-based diet, the butter and that salt that's added there and all the other different condiments, the little flavor packets all have salt. So it all adds up. It can be 5, 6, 7 grams of salt a day. Add that to going out to a restaurant where, again, chicken breast is pre-salted. Even if you buy it at the store and it's soaked to retain water, so you get, before you even cook it, there's salt, and you know there can be 500-800 milligrams of salt in a chicken breast. Then you start, you cook it, you add seasonings, it's even more and more salt. So it's just a hard, the perception of how much salt you're getting in a day can be very, very misleading. So that's, you know, again, so the more you can eat whole foods without these extra sauces and breadings, the better. A lot of the people that are in the category of hypertension now are less than 45 years of age, and that's actually very scary because they have a lot of time. They've already, so at 45, they already have vascular disease, and they want to turn back the clock. When you adopt a whole food plant-based diet in order to lower your blood pressure, you get the biggest bang for your buck by eliminating the processed foods up front. Then to try to prepare your blood vessels, I'm sorry, repair your blood vessels, you need to add in these nitric oxide producing foods. So that is collards, Swiss chard, kale, spinach, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, any kind of cabbage. So 4 cups a day of that minimum, 4 to 5 cups. You know, don't be stingy when you, you know, get your measuring cup out. You know, when I tell my patients, if you're going to have greens in your salad, grab 2 giant handfuls at lunch. You know, use that as your theoretical cup. Make sure you're adding beets to your salad or your dinner. Make sure evening, if you're making pasta, you have a couple handfuls of green in it. Put it on the bottom of the dish when you put your soup on top. All different ways of adding in greens to your diet that are nitric oxide producing. Just having them once a day is not going to do it. It's like a short-acting drug. You get a little bounce of nitric oxide after you chew the vegetables, and then you get another bounce of nitric oxide after it hits your small intestine. But then it wears off, so then you need to redose. So you're redosing throughout the day 4 or 5 times to make this work. It doesn't happen all of at once if you have had years and years and years of vascular damage. So you have to be very prudent. Again, if you give yourself a salt load every third day, you're going to kind of backpedal. So it takes time to adjust. People, you know, get on a whole food plant-based diet and expect the next day for everything to be better. Depending on how much vascular disease you have, it takes a little longer. But that said, there's so many people that have such a high salt intake. When we take that salt down, they get a tremendous bounce down in their blood pressure early on. So we can often get rid of a couple medications very quickly. My fear with these new recommendations is that it's just going to be promoted, take a pill. So, you know, it's going to be the norm for the 35 and 40-year-olds to start taking blood pressure pills. It's almost like a badge of honor. I'm an adult. I'm taking blood pressure pills. If you go back to the psychologist, he noted that, you know, when he asked a person why they didn't want to take blood pressure pills, it was because they didn't want to seem like they're old. But if we start dialing back what's the norm, that taking blood pressure pills is just what happens at 35 and 45 as opposed to 55 and 65, then that really gets scary. And you can see how that can happen if you look around. You know, the norm of what is considered overweight has, the perception of that has markedly changed in people's mind. You know, we're no longer the society of Jack LaLanne, we're a pinch an inch, and then, you know, we're in a more of a society of, you know, wear stretch pants and put your shirts out, and it's advertised and marketed to us every day, you know, how to hide what the real reality is. So, you know, if you have that blood pressure that's 130 over 80, you need to really start focusing on steps to decrease it. And it's not just subtle steps. You need to have a regimen and need to have a game plan on how you're going to reverse this. In my practice, we work with patients to change their diet and start getting salt out of their diet and incorporating exercise based on where they are. And there's a specific way in eliminating these blood pressure medications. Sometimes people are on 3 and 4 different medications, and they can't be stopped cold turkey. You can get a rebound in your heart rate and get a high a tachycardia. You can get a rebound in your blood pressure. Or if you stop them too quickly thinking that it's going to be okay and you really don't need it, you will see a rise in blood pressure. So you really do need to work with a physician as you change your diet and lifestyle to, you know, to back down on the medications. We work with people in office and as well as online to, you know, on a daily, weekly basis to gradually back down on these medications. There is a plan involved, and, you know, exercise is certainly a part of it, but we don't start people, you know, okay, couch 2, okay, you're going to run 3-5 miles a day. you know, we gradually build people up in what they're doing. But again, you know, to go out and join a gym and start doing one of these high intensity weightlifting regimens with high blood pressure can result in some serious risk. To take on the, you know, the long distance triathlon from the couch, it can be in serious risk if you have high blood pressure. So you really need to pay attention to it. It is a serious condition that can be reversed, but needs to have a detailed plan. The last thing I want to mention is a question I got regarding aspirin. Aspirin is shown in people that have had a heart attack, specifically men where the study was done, that have had a heart attack. It decreases the risk of blood clotting or a future heart attack. The study never really included women, but it's assumed that women who have had a heart attack to also take 81 milligrams of aspirin a day as a protection. Aspirin won't cause high blood pressure. The only benefit of aspirin in people with high blood pressure who have not had a heart attack would be potentially for the to decrease the risk of thrombosis, but it's never really been shown in people that aren't at high risk for a subsequent heart attack to be beneficial. So there's really no reason to take it unless this is for stroke prophylaxis or, again, a heart attack prophylaxis after a heart attack. You know, most of the time when people have high blood pressure that's persistent for years after being on a plant-based diet, we start to look at, you know, oil, because oil can cause direct vasoconstriction. So, you know, again, you need to work with a plant-based doctor to see if you can find where in your diet the problem's coming along, if you can't seem to get off your medications on a plant-based diet. But I really push the greens, and I really watch the processed foods. I was on a podcast last weekend with Ian Kramer. Thank you, Ian Kramer. A big shout out to him for having me on his live video question and answer session. But a calcium score came up, and I've had some emails regarding, do I recommend calcium scores for people? I have always been taught not to do a test unless you know what you're going to do with the answer. And if that test is going to change what you do, or what are you going to do with the results of that test, and is the subsequent things that you're going to do make people live longer or live better? So with regard to a calcium score, calcium is often seen in people that have coronary artery disease. Significant coronary artery disease. It is a sign of a plaque that's fibrous down, or it's had some scarring associated with it in the coronary. It is not associated oftentimes in young people that have soft plaques, or people that have 20% stenosis that are very vulnerable to having an acute heart attack, because if you have a soft plaque and there's not calcification, then these soft plaques can be ruptured by the cholesterol, which is crystal-like, and then the blood clotting mechanism starts. These aren't picked up by a calcium score. So what calcium score picks up is really diffuse coronary artery disease that has undergone scarring and calcification. So what would I do if somebody has a positive calcium score that is not having chest pain, not having shortness of breath, has not had just do it for that population at first. Certainly, I recommend a whole food plant-based diet, 4 cups of greens a day, get the oil out of your diet, start an exercise program, get your blood pressure under control, get your cholesterol under control, get your inflammation under control. So it wouldn't change. What happens if I did a calcium score on somebody and it was negative? Well, it doesn't mean they don't have soft plaques, doesn't mean they're not at risk for coronary artery disease, doesn't give them a clean bill of health. So I'm still going to recommend a whole food plant-based diet, no oil added, get your cholesterol down, get your inflammation down, exercise, become lean. So I'm going to offer the same treatment regardless of what the calcium score is. If you're a person that says, well, if I had a positive calcium score, then maybe that would cause me to change my diet and become plant-based, or maybe that would cause my husband to become plant-based. We have people all the time that come in with a heart attack, and they have stents placed acutely for a heart attack, or they have a bypass. And for the first 4 or 5 weeks, they might subtly change their diet. But having an event often, it really doesn't change people's mindset, or having a diagnosis doesn't usually change people's mindset. So if that's the rationale, I don't think that that's really going to be what tips people over. If it is, and you want the, you know, you, there's not much risk involved with a calcium score. You have the cost of the calcium score. You have the, you're going to know if you have calcified plaque. So if that causes you stress, knowing that you have coronary artery disease, and I have seen that in my patients, that they're terribly stressed, that they have no symptoms, but a positive calcium score, and you know, and are they going to have a heart attack? If that's going to bother you in an adverse way, again, I wouldn't do it. If you say, okay, I'm going to change because of the calcium score, then you can. There is radiation involved with a calcium score. It's about 200 x-rays. Again, there's a cost involved. Your insurance doesn't pick up for it. Some insurance plans do. But, you know, I think that it's certainly not a must for everybody to have a calcium score. I think it's a must for everybody to try to live as healthy as they can and do what they can nutritionally to avoid coronary artery disease. So I, you know, I'm not one that recommends calcium scores. If I have somebody that has chest pain, I want to see how they are functionally. So I'll put them on a treadmill, and I'm not going to do a treadmill that just, you know, gradually walk somebody just 85% and then stop them. I actually want to see how people walk, what their functional capacity is, how far can they walk. If you can walk 10 minutes on a treadmill test that's called a Bruce protocol, and, you know, it goes about, you know, with a steep incline every at 10 minutes, and it's going at a pretty good clip, that's the equivalent of what we call 10 minutes of activity. And it's the equivalent of digging a ditch or shoveling snow. So if you can do 10 minutes on a Bruce protocol without chest pain and without EKG changes, your prognosis is excellent, whether you have coronary artery disease or you don't. So to me, that's a better indication of somebody's actual functional capacity. I can do a sedentary person's calcium score, and it's not going to tell me anything about, you know, how good a shape they're in or if they get chest discomfort. So we want to see, you know, how, and then you can take that stress test. And if it is positive, you can actually influence someone's diet that way and say, okay, we're going to do a whole food plant-based diet if this gets you to change, because the likelihood you have coronary artery disease is high. And we can see if we can reverse it, because we know that just going ahead with a heart catheterization and doing an angioplasty on someone with stable anginal symptoms is not going to make a difference as far as their longevity or their symptoms. And that brings us to, you know, some of the coronary artery and stent child and stent trials. In 2007, there's a trial called the COURAGE trial. They did angioplasty and a stent plus medications versus just medications, and there was no advantage with regards to stroke, heart attack, or death. And they have 15 years of follow-up. Recently, you know, what's been shown in the British Heart Journal, in The Lancet, 2017 was published. They actually did a angioplasty versus a sham procedure, where they just put a flow catheter in, and then they repeated the treadmill test on these patients afterwards, and there was no improvement in someone's ability to walk and not develop chest discomfort or EKG changes before or after the angioplasty procedure. So, you know, even when people have the front artery, the left anterior descending, even when they have multifocal disease, even when their heart function is less than 50%, their ejection fraction, and even those with a severe ischemia on their stress test, has not been shown to be improved with a stent as long as they're not having an acute heart attack at the time. When people are having acute heart attack at the time with ST elevations, then those people have a completely blocked artery, and they need an intervention. But other than a life-saving procedure, we can do just as well with medications and nutritional therapy, and then you can back off on the medications as people get their act together, so to speak. A lot of times, if you start to Google, you'll come up with a study called the PURE study. And it was published by Dr. DeGagan from McMaster University. And, you know, basically he alluded that, you know, moderation was okay because nutritional therapy didn't work. Well, this is a very poorly evaluated study as far as looking at the change in people's diet. It was all recall. And we know people don't do anything in moderation. there's really no ability to just eat a little bit of cheese or a little bit of butter, a little bit of ice cream. We can't monitor ourselves on that. It's a toxic substance, if not from coronary artery disease, but we know that it is. Certainly, it promotes cancer and promotes inflammation, promotes autoimmune disease. So this notion that we can just eat little bits of something and be okay, that's very toxic, is really foolish and most likely self-serving for the from those physicians. So, you know, I really do wish all of you the best in this eating season that's coming upon us. It's difficult. I don't think you should beat yourself up over for slips. If there's a slip tomorrow on Thanksgiving and you eat something you should have, you know, get back on the track the next day and look what you did and learn from it. You know, in my practice, we try to look at things that weren't exactly what we wanted as learning experiences. So if somebody eats something the night before and their glucose is high the next day, then we look back and see what the problem is. If the blood pressure jumps, then we look back and see what the problem is. And once you can correlate in your mind that eating a high-fat diet causes indigestion and it causes high glucose numbers and it causes your blood pressure to soar, then you have some data that you know that, and you also know that when you eat greens, your blood pressure comes down. When you eliminate dairy, your joint pain goes away. So that's all reinforcement. So be mindful of what you're eating and learn from potential mistakes or potential imperfections. Because sometimes, you know, you just have to do what you have to do in certain situations. You don't have to overkill, but try to do the best that you can in the situation that you are. I suggest to my patients, once again, one last time, is to, you know, eat before you go if you have to go to a place that's really going to be tempting so that you're not that hungry. And make yourself something that you really enjoy for when you come home, so that you're really going to enjoy what you have and what makes you healthy. And also be thankful for your health that you've achieved. You know, part of Thanksgiving is not just looking at food, but being thankful. And I hope that the health that you've regained from being plant-based is one of those. As far as what's going on here tomorrow, besides making a whole food plant-based dinner, we're going to go for a run in the morning. Take the dogs. I have the pleasure of having Addie being here, the registered dietitian, my daughter. And so she brought her German Shepherd. So we're going to take my two German Shepherds and her German Shepherd for a run in the morning. And we're going to prepare some nice plant-based food and just enjoy our visit. This weekend, I'll be working in the backyard. Looking at the garden, we have peppers and herbs starting to come in. The tower garden is amazing. If you haven't seen one of those, it's I'm really impressed by how things are going. My tomato plants in probably 3 to 4 weeks' time are about 12 inches tall. I've got cucumbers going, lettuce and kale, and I think we're going to add a layer onto it. So I'm really, really a fan of the tower garden to put on the porch, especially to supplement greens. You know, we eat so many greens around here, again, 4 to 5 cups a day, that it's kind of hard to catch up, so or to keep up. And if we can grow some that we can go out and snip, that's perfect. I have parsley growing and oregano growing and some thyme in the backyard and basil. And the cilantro is kind of in transition. So it's always nice to be able to go out and get those herbs to add to your dishes. And those herbs are also nitric oxide producing. In the practice, the office is being remodeled so that we can actually bring the nutrition classes back to the office. Currently, we're off-site at the Chamber of Commerce here in Port Charlotte where they can hold us. But we're actually doing a kitchen install in the office and a demo center so we can actually do some baked goods, maybe bring a dehydrator in and do some raw food demonstrations. We're also going to be able to do yoga there. We're aiming, again, to have a two-day conference in March where on Friday, March 23rd, we'll do consultations, myself, Timmery Hagenberger, and Addie Minerich, are my registered dietitian pals, and of course, Addie works with me. And so you'll be able to come in and see and have a one-on-one consultation, slots permitting. And we're hoping to have a couple yoga classes that day, and the next day, and then on March 24th, we'll have the all-day conference where we have a whole food breakfast and lunch prepared for you that's without any oil or salt or sugar. And Dr. Campbell's coming in, Tim Marie's coming in, and Addie will be here, and myself. And we'll have a great day of plant-based learning and education. In the meanwhile, please check the website, drdulaney.com. It's drdulaney.com for things that are happening. We're about to launch a members-only site where we have special content and webinars and lectures, and we're gonna post the nutrition class lectures up on that site. So if you're not in town and you can't get to the plant-based education classes, then you can see the at least the slideshows online. And you know, we do two newsletters a month, one to all our mailing list people. So if you'd like to be on our mailing list and get a newsletter, those in our practice get an additional members only newsletter with recipes, tips, and what's going on. So please check all that out. We're going to have on the website the shirts available with the podcast logo. We've got it shaped like a heart. It's got the shoes and the arteries and veins. It's pretty cool looking. So that's going to be available for you to purchase. It'd be a great Christmas gift that you want to get somebody that's going to enjoy being active and running and hearts and everything. So that'd be a great gift. And we also have the Jamie Delaney plant-based shirt as well. So let us know. We have the online one and two opportunities for you to be a part of our practice. And you can, no matter where you are, can also be a full member of our practice. And we can consult with you and get you off your medications and help you along your journey. So email me at jamie@drdulaney.com if you have any questions about what the website says as far as practice opportunities. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Don't shop too much, and get out and move a little bit, and I'll check in with you next week. Thank you for listening.